I'm Bobby Williams, and you are listening to Dignity, a four-part podcast docuseries about Washington State's juvenile justice system. This show is about taking an in-depth look at Washington's juvenile rehabilitation. The hope is that you'll leave with a better understanding of the changes that are happening and the people behind this change. Being that this is a four-part series, I encourage you to give a listen to episodes 1 and 2. This episode, we are talking about peer mentorship, meaning young people learning from those with similar lived experiences. We're also going to be talking about facilities that are helping youth to reintegrate back into the community. We're covering a lot of ground here. This is Dignity. Chapter 3, Returning to the Community and Giving Back. I originally met Joshua Smith as part of the Olympia, Washington music scene back in 2011. Through the scene, I've made a lot of friends, and I've seen friends deal with some major life challenges. Joshua had experienced incarceration in his younger years and had managed to get to the other side of it all. Today, Joshua is working with Washington's Department of Children, Youth, and Families Juvenile Rehabilitation as a peer mentor. After hearing about Joshua's work, I invited him to the podcast studio. It was time to catch up.
My name is Joshua Smith. I am Washington State's Peer Support Program Specialist. I think peer support is kind of what it sounds like. We've all experienced peer support from the time we were little tykes, right? From learning how to tie our shoes to learning our first cuss word in another language, right? Really considering, like, where did we learn the things that we learned fastest? And a lot of times that was from our peers. And what behavioral health and mental health systems have put into place is this peer support process, which is any individual with a lived experience in a system of care is likely better at understanding that system of care and how to navigate that system of care, and more importantly, navigating out of that system of care. So what JR has done is they've implemented the same process where now there's peer support, which is really just changing hiring practices and bringing in different programming and policies that will allow individuals like myself who have experienced juvenile justice systems and adult justice systems to come into our systems of care as leaders, as innovators and instructors, and as staff, more importantly. So I think that's the peer support that we're gonna be landing on mostly today is that lived experience in a system of care within a staff position. You want that person in a staff position.
In my previous interview with Haley Lau, the education program administrator, she put it this way.
Most of our staff, I believe a majority of our staff, have not experienced incarceration. So how can they know what that person's going through? So the power of peer support, that is a huge component to helping young people see a different future for themselves. And again, if it's a peer and they're coming in and that's a peer-to-peer relationship, it's not the security person. It's not my residential counselor. That's somebody here who gets me and sees me and wants me to be successful. I think all staff want to see young people be successful, but they need to hear it from a lot of different voices.
A core component of the peer support model is relationship building. They hang out with young people, they listen, they do activities together, they offer advice. What they're doing is building trust. Another component that's very interesting about the peer support model is that it doesn't end with staff members. Joshua actually trains incarcerated young people to become peer mentors themselves.
As we all know, I think those that are closest to the problem are closest to the solution. And I think that to get the right peer support, specialist in the space that we need them to be in. We need to pull from the communities that we're serving, right? For instance, similar to myself, I have lived experience within the juvenile justice system. However, I'm so far removed spatially and time-wise and just in my thought processes from that experience, my impact can be less impactful as an individual who was more recently within those systems and understand those systems and how to navigate them as they currently are. So my goal is to get certified peer counseling trainings within our juvenile rehabilitative settings.
So what does that look like though? You certify a youth as a peer mentor. What are they doing?
A certified peer counselor is really going to focus on their experiences, right? Because it's their experiences that they have expertise in. For instance, if I was a youth who has gang affiliations or gang experiences, I might find it easier to navigate those spaces. I might have expertise in those spaces that others may not. And therefore, I think my impact in those spaces would be more influential.
I could see how a young person with a few year sentence could get into this idea of supporting their peers. They can get out there and help the next person. But some youth in juvenile rehabilitation are sentenced to 30 plus years. Was there a place for them in peer support?
Yeah, I do experience that. And I think it's in those spaces where I really get to highlight the mutuality of it. Like, I'm here to learn from you, right? What was your experience? What is your experience, right? How can you and I as a team create a better experience, not only for others, but for yourself, right? So having a lengthy sentence definitely doesn't leave you out of the work. I think that it might pull you in more. I work with individuals who are on their 17th year of 35. And introducing the peer support modalities really invigorates them and ignites them to say, whoa, I not only can support myself with these skills, but it's the community that comes in behind me and even before me that I can really reach out to and be impactful to. And it gives individuals like a mission. It gives individuals a vision. It gives them something to do, right?
While some youth are dealing with lengthy sentences, that's not the case for everyone. Washington's Children, Youth, and Families Department of Juvenile Rehabilitation oversees 2 secure facilities. They also oversee 8 community-based facilities. These are group homes focused on helping youth transition back into their communities. Felice Upton, Assistant Secretary of JR, explained the community facilities to me this way.
Our community facilities are a partial confinement option, or in some states they're called staff secure. And it is a step down for young people to be able to try out the skills that they may have learned and fail safely and still have a support network in the staff that work there to make sure that they stay on track and that they don't participate in criminal behavior, that we don't want them to be in the deeper end of the system. We're always looking at positive movement. We want people to move to lower and lower custody levels until they're not involved with us. That's an opportunity for young people to go get a job, save some money, have first lesson deposit, be able to get established back in the community.
Through my work in the social service community, I had made many visits to Touchstone, a community-based facility in Olympia, Washington. I called the administrator at Touchstone, and within a few days, I was ringing their doorbell, podcast equipment in hand.
My name's Dan Henry, and I'm a community facility administrator at Touchstone State Community Facility.
Something that stands out about Touchstone is how much it feels like a regular home, with maybe a few extra offices.
The environment has to be right. Just in the facility. The youth aren't in the facility all the time. They're at work and they're at school and they're at the gym, but we're all together there. The constant is the home, and we want it to be a place where they want to be. We wanted a family feel The bedrooms aren't cells. They're bedrooms. They have posters on the wall. They have nice, comfortable mattresses. And, you know, they hang their pictures of their family up. And they wear regular clothes. They don't have uniforms.
I wanted to know why these facilities exist in the first place. Why have this middle ground as opposed to just releasing youth back into their communities? Dan explained more about how Touchstone works.
In the institutions, they're learning dialectical behavior therapy, and they're in acquisition mode. When they come out to the community facilities, they're in generalization mode, which is where they take the skills that they learned from the institutions and get to apply them in real settings like a high school or a college, a real job. And then as if issues arise, we're around there to help mediate any problems. We're there to work with their families directly in the building. It's just an opportunity to be in an environment that's more like home. They have bedrooms. And these guys have a lot to lose. They're under sentence. They don't want to go back to the medium and max facilities. And they want to be successful. And we get to show them several different paths. And if you're releasing straight from a locked facility to home and a job doesn't go well, you might be burned on the job market for good and revert to old ways. We have youth for a long time and they get to try out different jobs just like most of us did. Try and fail and try and succeed. You know, everything that comes up is an opportunity to learn whether it turns out good or bad.
At Touchstone, youth are given the opportunity to reset the way they engage in the community. It's a chance to make a major perspective shift. Dan pointed out how a huge part of that shift comes from youth not having their doors locked.
I think the main thing is that we have to really look at the difference between a community facility and an institution program. And the main difference is the locked door. And so how many youth do we have behind a locked door that don't need a locked door to contain their behaviors? So if they don't need a locked door, we have facilities that they can go to and thrive in. And we've already determined that we want every youth to be in the least restrictive possible. And I think that's the main thing, is to really understand that when you have young people locked behind a door because the law says you have to, that it's really hard for young people to get past that and then produce the type of behaviors needed in those kind of environments to lower their security level to get to a place. So some of the youth get stuck in a restriction cycle where they're just constantly in trouble and they're not able to get out of it. And a lot of it could be environmental.
Something that Touchstone and other community facilities represent is that for youth involved in juvenile rehabilitation, this isn't their final stop. They are returning to their communities. A lot of youth want to take what they've learned from their experiences and use it to help the next generation. Again, here's Haley Lau.
They want to give back to their communities. That's something that I hear when I meet and talk to young people, like, what do you want to do when you leave here? And many of them say, I want to help people from my community not get here. My brothers, my sisters, other people, to avoid making the same mistakes that I made.
Robbery, the young person I spoke with at Green Hill, is interested in becoming a mental health professional.
I'll say I'm a lot more mature. I think about a lot of things more. When I was 16, for some reason, I had this state of mind that I was kind of untouchable, I would say. I had got away with so many things, and eventually I had got caught, and I never, ever seen myself getting caught. You know what I'm saying? I see myself dying before anything. And I would say now I got goals, and you know what I'm saying? I'm ambitious, and you know what I'm saying? I'm working every day to become a better man than I was when I was 16.
Has anything helped you along in that process here?
I would say education. Because as far as As far as that, I want to do like therapy. I'm into psychology, and so they're offering that here as far as college.
Ron from Green Hill is interested in reforming the juvenile justice system.
Juvenile justice reform, you know, working on the system and just trying to create a better system for generations to come, youth after me, my younger people, and just in general, you know, just to see a change within the justice system that actually helps to create and reform young individuals that end up in the system and really gives opportunities to youth to be able to excel on levels that they never believed or seen themselves to once they reach the outside world. For sure, I'm passionate about that also.
Back at Touchstone, Dan told me a story that really spoke to this idea of young people using their lived experiences to support their peers.
Our youth are working with community members that have lived experience, and then some of our youth are being trained to be peer mentors because they right now are getting that lived experience. And they're working with other youth in different facilities and then in the community. And we've had several youth that have released that have this as a job now. I have one youth that released a couple years ago that is now a manager at a store. And he has his own mentoring program that he does for free. It's nonprofit. He reaches out to youth that were in the same situation that he was in and is working with them on the caseload to just help get them services and everything they need. What the youth tell me is someone that's been through what they've been through, they can connect with immediately. And then seeing them in a position now that they're helping people and have made it gives them inspiration and hope. And that's really the thing, is seeing somebody that's been in your shoes really builds hope. And that's what our guys need. If they don't have hope, they don't have anything.
This has been episode 3 of Dignity, our 4-part podcast docuseries. In episode 4, we are wrapping things up by talking about growth and change, relationship building between staff and youth, and what's motivating the people behind juvenile rehabilitation to show up to work in the first place. As always, I want to thank Smoke M2D6 for the beats. I'm Bobby Williams. We'll see you next episode. Peace!